My name is Jose Gonzalez. I'm from Sweden.
Upon hearing your name, what percentage of the world would guess you're Swedish? How's that for a good segue?
Yeah, I guess 0.1%.
Now, in Brazil, because I have a good friend who lives in Sao Paulo, wouldn't I be calling you Jose?
Or in Spain, it would be Jose.
Right, so it could be either way. So now, how did your Argentinian parents get to Sweden? I'm sure you're bored with being asked that, but, you know, not everybody reads all the stories, so.
In 76, they had to flee the country. There was this military dictatorship, and so they went first to Rio de Janeiro for 6 months, and eventually the Swedish embassy helped them out of Latin America, and they ended up in Sweden.
And eventually you ended up in Sweden.
Yeah. And I was,
by nature of the fact that they were there.
Yeah, I was born there in 78.
So. Exactly. Okay, so we're going to get to the album, but the Sony commercial that features Heartbeats takes place right here in San Francisco. Did you see the commercial before you let them have the rights to the song?
Yeah. That was really nice that I had the chance to see it. And I mean, I was a bit skeptical at first, but when I saw it, I thought it was beautiful, and I asked the knife, and they were okay with it too, so that's good.
And it doesn't hurt, right, when you've got a new record coming out, and they put a big sticker on there, say, featured in the Sony commercial.
Yeah, no, I mean, it helps selling records and getting my music to...
Here in America, at least, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
And licensing sometimes is better than rock and roll, right?
Yeah, in the sense that you get money and you don't have to tour.
Yeah, you don't have to perform. Now, I'm not familiar with the knife who originally did the song, so how did you discover the song?
I knew this is, it's taken from their second album, Deep Cuts, and I knew them before they started releasing stuff.
And they're huge in Sweden, are they not?
Yeah, they're really popular there.
And it's funny because, well, I don't know if it's funny, but there are an enormous amount of Swedish bands that are suddenly huge over here. The Concretes and, my goodness, I'm trying to think, what's the other band that's really, really good? That Shout Out Louds?
Jens
Lekman. Yeah.
Jens Lekman, or now Frida Hyvönen is the kind of a new...
Yeah, so suddenly a lot. What do you think about the Swedish invasion?
Yeah, I don't know if it's an invasion, but... there's a lot of good music in Sweden, and I guess it's just natural that we like playing abroad.
Now, was South by Southwest your first time playing in the U.S.? Was that your coming out party?
Yeah, I just did one kind of showcase in New York, so yeah, it was the first part of tour.
And what did you? Were you prepared? Did anybody explain to you that there were going to be 1,200 bands and 60 clubs, and that this was just going to be as, because I was there.
Yeah.
I saw the, and I've been there a bunch. So were you informed just how it was not going to be like anything you've ever been to before?
Yeah, I had friends playing there, Division of Larly, and they told me all about it. But being there was a completely different thing. Just seeing that on this street with bars just packed together and bands playing. Yeah.
Isn't that just, and what's amazing is that you pass and you can pretty much just by hearing what's coming out of the doors, you can decide whether you want to go in or not.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of it you hear and it's kind of like the music almost blows you away and you say, I'm not sure I'm going to go in there,
yeah.
At least if you're me.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty wild. Now, after South by Southwest, if I'm correct, you spent April and May in Europe, then you're touring the U.S., then you're in Australia, Ireland, and back in the U.S. When do you rest?
November.
November? November you get to take a break?
Yeah, I'm on a constant tour until middle or late October. I'm doing both solo stuff and then I tour a month with 07 here in the States.
Who also, their new record is just absolutely wonderful.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great stuff. Now, you hit it big at home first, but then the buzz, and this happens a lot with America these days, where no matter where the artist comes from, the buzz hits in the UK, you know, over in England first. And then we in America suddenly love anything that's big in the UK, and we catch up fast. But it seems kind of ironic to me that, you know, Sweden, UK, and then over here. And then it's probably, and then when it sells a lot here, it'll probably bounce back to other countries that you never would suspect. So did anybody tell you that, you know, the record company turn around and say, so this is how this works, or?
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. I mean, there are some practical reasons for that. At least my record company is really small, and it's just two persons. They don't have that much money, so it's easier to put up a couple of showcases in London than to try to make it big in the US. And just by playing in London, there's a lot of magazines there that are read throughout the world, and maybe like Mojo or Uncut. And, yes. and so it's a cheap way. It just takes a long time, but it's a kind of a cheap way of doing promotion.
Yeah, Mojo's about as good as it gets. If you get 4 stars in Mojo, then England turns around. And the Enemy is one thing, but Mojo, if you get 4 stars, people actually think, oh, the music is good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it gives people a reason to at least check it out.
Yeah, well, it's a classy magazine, so it's good stuff. How quiet, as we hear the clinking in the background of the glasses, which I've had on many interviews here, how quiet are your audiences at your performances? Because, you know, a cell phone left on can really stand out when you're playing your music. It's not like you have 64 Marshall amps going.
Yeah, no, I mean, people are really quiet nowadays. I mean, people usually know that my music is quiet, and they're aware that of that fact.
So, yeah. Any good stories about unplanned sounds that have made their way into the music that suddenly you said, oh, good, maybe I'll just use this as a sample and make a song?
I mean, while I was recording Hand on Your Heart, there were some seagulls outside of my window, and I guess that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, what I think would be the funniest thing during your show is if somebody had a ringtone of one of your songs, yeah. And it went on while you were playing it, and it all got synchronized.
Yeah, no, it's been some burps and stuff.
I don't know if those are great. Well, yeah, it's that quiet that you can actually, in this, and we're at Bimbo's, so the sound is so good you might hear it. Yeah. Now, the album, as you said, just literally before we got on tape here, the album is just 30 minutes long. Were there tracks you decided not to put on there or save for later EPs? And, you know, tell me about that, because some people just do it because they say, some people try to put, you know, 18 songs on a record and use all 80 minutes of a CD, and others just say, like the old days, you know, you could only get 20 minutes on the side of a record.
Yeah. I guess it was a mixture of me being inspired by old records where you have like two sides of an LP and you put 5 on one and 5 on the other. But also, I didn't have that many songs there. The old songs I had, I thought were a bit cheesy, so I wanted to keep it short but good instead of watering it out. So
you didn't put any hidden tracks on there so people could go,
Yeah, maybe for the next one. No, I think I like records where you kind of just push everything in, and like the way that hip-hop artists do sometimes, just 20 tracks or some, like Operation Ivy, there's a lot of stuff. But I like, if you try to make it short and with high quality, I think that's the way to...
It worked for that band, The Beatles.
Yeah, true.
I think it worked for them quite well. They didn't purposely, until they started getting into the White Album, they didn't suddenly start putting in a lot of stuff just to play. Now, what made you decide to cover a Kylie Minogue song? Is she very popular in Sweden?
I guess she's really popular everywhere, to some extent. The reason why I did it was... I was watching television and saw the video and started listening to the lyrics. I mean, I'd heard the song a million times before, but at that point, I started listening and I thought it was a kind of a clash to listen to these kind of deep lyrics about broken heart and love while she was jumping around and the production of the song was really poppy and happy.
And you decided that you had to kind of bring the song back to its lyrical genesis, so to speak.
Yeah, I saw it as a challenge and more of a fun thing to do.
No, it's neat. The video for Stay in the Shade is just so incredibly wonderful. I watched it again this morning. So tell me about the artist, because it's really, really beautiful to look at.
Cool. I'm glad you like it. It's one of my oldest friends, Elias Araya. He's been playing drums in many of my bands since I was 14. And, well, he's he's done all my artwork, and so I was really happy that he tried to make this video. He's done, just he scanned in drawing by drawing, so it's.
So it's truly like cell animation.
Yeah, it's like animation
in the old school animation. When animation was good.
Yeah.
As opposed to these robotic things that we see today that don't even look like anything real.
Yeah.
You recorded the album at home with no major producer. So is there any pressure to now bring in the big producer on the next record? You know, and would you like one, or would you like to continue doing things the way you you've been doing them?
No, I'll definitely do it on my own. The only part where I'm concerned about is that I don't like writing lyrics, and I thought about asking someone to write them for me, but I know that I have a lot of musical ideas, so I'm not bringing anyone in, and definitely not while I'm recording. I want to do it on my own at home.
So have you begun the thinking for that process? Because now, how long has the record been out since day one, as opposed to when we received it here?
October 2003.
2003. Oh my goodness! So you've been living with this record and this material for going on 3 years.
Yeah.
It takes a while sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and it's a bit strange. And now I feel kind of okay with it. At like the first month or two when I released it back in 2003, I thought I really wanted to move on, because the songs at that time were a bit old too. So, but now I'm kind of used to bringing the album to new audiences, and as long as they feel that it's new and fresh, I feel okay presenting it to them.
So who's the newest audience? Who, now that America has the record, who doesn't have it, and who's going to get it? Anybody really unusual? Like, does Japan have it, Major League, or?
Yeah, no, not Major League, but I mean, this small record label in Sweden, they're still licensing it out to different labels, and I guess the ones that are, what do you call it, on next are Argentina and Brazil and Mexico.
And your label here is kind of unusual here in America, because you can find Erasure on there, but then closer to you can find Richard Hawley. So how did they end up choosing Mute?
I mean, Adrian, the U.S. A&R, he really liked the album from day one, and I mean, I've talked to him about this, and he likes the dark aspect of my album, and the rhythms, and so in that sense, it's a kind of. It's not that far from the other stuff that's released on Mute.
And I dug pretty deep, but I also read that you on a session covered a Massive Attack song. I bet that would surprise a lot of your audience.
No, it's one of my live favorites. It's Teardrop, my Massive Attack.
Do you find that audiences are surprised, you know, because they'll hear the record and they probably try to say, okay, this is this. But then when they find out more about you, and I'm going to segue right into your other project, I checked out the video for Junip. So nice singing skull there, speaking of dark. Yeah. So tell me about that band, because I bet that people, you know, hear some of the songs and they say, okay, you know, it's this and that. But if they dig a little deeper, they find out that this is not happy-go-lucky singer-songwriter land that you really are all about.
No, I mean, I've been doing different styles of music since I was young, and especially I like very different styles. So, yeah, I mean, Junip is again, Elias, the guy who does all my artwork. He plays drums.
You know? But he didn't animate the skull.
No, it's another good friend of mine called Andreas Nilsson. He's been doing a lot of videos, and he plays guitar in this band in Sweden.
And I also saw a cover of a Springsteen song on one of the EPs. So what made you decide to cover that song? I mean, Massive Attack, yeah. Bruce Springsteen, Kylie Minogue, you know, anybody who's going to try to label Jose Gonzalez is not going to do a very good job, are they? No, you're keeping everybody wondering.
No, yeah, but I guess it's in the same way that the Johnny Cash did his covers, or Cat Power did her yes. covers album, and in a way it's kind of it doesn't seem that strange when now people almost expect me to do strange covers. So
it's become a tradition where early on people would have said, I'm not sure what this, but I mean, it is interesting because of course different places, you know, England is a single society, so you have to have the hit single, like A Heartbeat or whatever. And America, we don't even know anymore because the formats are so that for them to try to say, where shall we put him? So what do you think about all of that? You know, it's because you do obviously love all this wide range of music.
Well, I definitely like the aspect of not thinking of singles, but more of albums or like a complete thing. And I don't know, I guess it all works out as long as people like the music, and it'll find its path.
As long as it actually gets there.
And gets to people.
Yeah, I mean, that's why internet is so good.
Yeah, isn't it, though? So the last thing we like to do, and I think you're going to, now that we've discussed all this, we like to do, and it's kind of what we fill out the rest of the hour with so you can have some fun with it. We call it a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is the bread. And then anything else you want in between, and I literally pull out the CDs and the vinyl and whatever it takes, there's not been a song I have not been able to find. So two of your songs, and then anything. You notice I didn't ask you the influences question. You know, what did you listen to when you were a kid? Because I don't believe in doing that. I find that the musical people make the best DJs.
Maybe that 108 song. It's the first track on... I need to check that. I don't know the name of it. Nico, Fairest of the Seasons, one of my favorites. Fela Kuti, Zombie. Amadou Mariam, Kulabili. Nina Simone, Sea Lion Woman.
It's amazing how many Nina Simone tracks I play from all different genres of bands.
Yeah.
She's just pervasive.
What else? You can put on the Danger Doom, The Mask, Joan Gilberto, Undiu.